Hi, everybody. My name is Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here tonight. I'm glad to be sober. I'm glad to be in a gathering of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank the committee or whoever's responsible for extending the privilege of me participating at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. It's my opinion, and I hope it's always remained such, that it's some type of a privilege to be allowed to come and sit in these rooms. See, I've never been able to get it through my sick head that I have a right to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous just because I was lucky enough to get sober and stay that way. And the reason I tell you that is because everything that's good and decent in my life is the byproduct of the God I discovered sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything. I'm extremely pleased to be here tonight, fully clothed and in my right mind. And the reason I tell you that is it seems like to me the longer I stay sober, the more necessary it becomes for me to remember from whence I came. And I never want to forget that a little over a half a century ago, I came to in a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary drifting in and out of total insanity. And because of a loving God has expressed himself through our program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around on my hands and knees like an animal. Now, if I don't get anything more out of this deal, I guess I could live with that all the way back to my room tonight. Makes me feel good. Now, I'd like to stand here tonight without a shadow of a doubt in my mind and tell you that's where whiskey took me to. Oh, I'd love to tell you that. See, that's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol ever did in my life, it kept me alive long enough to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm as sure as I'm standing here, if I hadn't taken a drink of alcohol, I'd have probably blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. Now, I don't know whether it's true or not, but it seems like to me that I was born needing an answer. Now, the problem with that is I don't know what's wrong with me. Kind of hard to seek the answer to a problem if you don't know what your problem is. Now, I'm a little restless and irritable and discontented, but I don't understand then, like I know tonight, that that's the symptoms of the most deadly illness ever been known to mankind. My sponsor tells me that there's written history about my illness that stretches back almost 4,000 years. And in all that period of time, this is the only answer for people like me in over 4,000 years of recorded history of this illness. Now, I don't know that. Oh, I know a lot about whiskey. Everybody in my family drank whiskey. I mean, they drank it. They made it. They drank it. They sold it. And they gathered up on Saturday night and beat the hell out of one another. That's what they did. I mean, it's kicking around Saturday. I mean, they stole each other's women. They drank each other's whiskey. They beat the hell out of each other. You know, my mother got drunk and beat up my dad, and my dad got drunk and beat up my mother. Every once in a while, they both got drunk and beat me up. Violence has never bothered me. You know, it's almost like a spiritual experience to put your foot in somebody's belly. You know what I mean? It gives me chills to even think about it sometimes. What bothered me was Wednesdays. Wednesdays bothered me greatly because the same people who were doing this to one another on the weekends were putting their arms around one another and saying things like, we love one another because we're family. Now, I don't know whether that scarred me or not. It never came out on the couch. But I do know that I never uttered that word to another human being prior to coming to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous or for a long time after I was here. It just wasn't in my vocabulary. See, I believe, personally, because I've had a long time to look back on it, I believe that I've been searching for an answer to this dilemma that I was in all my life. I needed this answer, and I believe the beginning of the realization that there was a problem there proved to me that I've been searching for this answer all my life. And I didn't know where it was. I looked up one day, I saw my grandmother. Now, my grandmother lived when she was 90 years old. She never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. My grandmother wouldn't think it's a big deal. I've been sober 48 years. Big deal, she'd say. I ain't had a drink for 90. I used to look at her and say, you ought to have had a couple, Granny, make you feel better from time to time. My grandmother got everything she needed out of the church she went to. I used to watch her on Sunday morning where they'd used her house for a war zone. And she'd get up on Sunday morning and she'd step over the bodies and she'd put the best thing on she had and she'd be gone for a couple hours. And when she came back, something had happened to her. She was a little lighter in her step and a little easier in her being. She kind of danced around these people and cleaned them up and sang songs to Jesus. Now, I took a look at that, and I filed that in my keen alcoholic mind. For you who are new here tonight, this is probably the only place in the world you're ever going to hear about the keen alcoholic mind. You ain't ever going to Al-Anon here about it, I'll tell you that. Ask us a question, we'll give you an answer. I mean, you've been to any of these Ask It Basket meetings, you'll understand. We answered about questions we don't know a damn thing about, but we said something about them, I'll tell you that. And people had all these workshops, they don't know what the hell they're talking about either, but they were giving you answers about things. I mean, just, alcoholics will do that, you know. You ask them a question, they'll pull you over in the corner, talk to you about 20 minutes about drinking a Coke or something. You know, but not anything about the problem. But see, I got this thing in my mind, and it's very kind of strange because I got an idea that all I'm going to have to do is go where my grandmother goes and do what my grandmother does. I'd be like my grandmother. I'm not like my grandmother. My grandmother's not alcoholic. I didn't know that. So as a child, I put my hand in my grandmother's hand and went over and sat at my grandmother's church on Sunday and waited for it to happen to me. Whatever was happening to her wasn't happening to me. And I'm saying to her, when's it going to happen, Granny? She says, when you go down front, it's going to happen. I went down front. Nothing happened down there either. And it took me a long time to realize that there was nothing wrong in the world with my grandmother's church. There was something wrong with the jackass sitting in it, me. See, what I'm doing in that church, I understand today, is I'm looking for something way out here to make me feel better in here. And it only goes to prove to me that the problem has always been there. Always. And my answer came in a strange way. I was sitting on the back porch of my grandfather's house one day with my grandfather watching him drink whiskey out of a fruit jar. He put it down and he went somewhere. And I picked it up and took a drink of it. That's all I did. And I guess, according to the book Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the only authority in Alcoholics Anonymous, the next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem out in the world. I'm an alcoholic because I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. Now, it really wasn't a bad reaction, if you want to know the truth. It's been a bad reaction to have another talker here tonight. I mean, don't you ever get tired of people bad-mouthing whiskey? It made me puke and snot run out of my nose. I didn't like the taste of it. It was just, oh, I want to slap them. Come on. The best friend I ever had, for Christ's sake. It's like bad-mouthing an old girlfriend or something. You know what I mean? It's just, I'll tell you, that stuff went inside of me and kind of stilled the madness. That's what it did. It took me from the black pit of nothingness and stood me into the grave fringe of the business of living. It installed in me some type of arrogance that, damn you, world, it's all right. I'm not good enough to be around the good people, but I'm too good to be around the bad people. It's okay right here. That's what alcohol did for me. I wasn't ready for what happened next because it triggered a pattern that only happens to alcoholics of my type, maybe 1 out of 10 people who drink it, according to everything I know. See, once I put alcohol into my system, once I put it in there, then and only then am I drinking to overcome a craving that's beyond all human understanding and beyond all human help. I didn't know that. Because what happened to me was 3 days later, I was pulled out from underneath a bridge and stood in front of a judge and sent to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They pulled me out of a car in Compton, stood me in front of a judge and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Now, that's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I just traveled around. I went from reform school to junior penitentiary. penitentiaries to penitentiaries to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I'm a little more partial to nut house, if you want to know the truth. It's a little more macho. Oh, come on, for Christ's sake. If you're going to be bad, you ought to be bad. I mean, don't quit drinking because you puke a little. Hang in there. Give it everything you got. Alcoholics Anonymous works a hell of a lot better when you run out of options. I threw everything into the battle, lost the battle. I didn't know what I was fighting because I walked out of institution from the time I was that small until I was full grown. Every time as physically sober as I am this moment, not one time did I ever say to myself, self, do you realize how long it's been since you've had a series of electroshock treatments? Why don't you have a drink? Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out there and kill your baby brother? Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out and stand on them street corners and join those gangs and commit those atrocities? Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out there and tear your mother's heart out one more time? Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and do that? No. See, I'm alcoholic. Alcoholics of my type do not take a drink of alcohol after being sober for a period of time. Alcoholics of my type do not want to be drunk. I just want to go, whew. But you see, that's all it takes. Once I put it in there, I'm powerless not to take the next one. And that cycle went on and on and on and on, and me not knowing what it is. I'm a kid on a reform school, released from a reform school. I'm 10 or 11 years old. I'm sitting around on the street corner with my little gang, and we're trying to be gangbangers and act tough. And if we'd had hats, we'd have probably had them on backwards. We'd, you know, nose rings or something. I don't know what all we'd had. But we were trying to masquerade how frightened we were and how hip we were trying to be. And I'm drinking or something. See, I am I'm kind of a unique individual. Now, I didn't say I was different. I'm just unique. I started on cheap wine and worked down. And that ain't easy. But I'm sitting on a street corner, I'm drinking a thing called Marco Petri Red. Now, I know you've never heard about it, and the reason you haven't heard about it is because it was the experimental stage of the Thunderbird. That's why you never heard of it. It never saw grape, but it'd get you, it'd hang you without a rope. We're drinking this stuff, and we're talking bad and smelling bad and acting bad, and a guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, you ought to try these. And he gave me some pills. Now, I don't remember saying to him, what are those? Will they bother me if I take them? Thank God they weren't X-Lax. Wow, could you imagine going into a meeting and a guy say, I'm an alcoholic and an X-Lax taker? Let me share my experience. No thanks. Works, all I can tell you. It's like somebody lit the afterburners on a rocket ship. Only my rocket ship never took me up anywhere. My rocket ship took me right straight to hell. And if your hell's any hotter than where I've been, I pray God I don't ever go there. A couple years later on that same street corner, around that same little gang, I'm eating these pellets and I'm drinking this cheap wine, and a guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years, I stuck needles in my arm in and out of institutions. That's what I do. See, I live out there in the streets. And I do what people like me who live in the street do. I destroy every single thing that comes in contact with me. I'm like a plague. There's a reason for that. I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things and I'm a user of people, so therefore I'm a loser. I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. I'm self-serving. Got an ego bigger than this whole building. My entire lifetime was spent before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, for a long time after I was here, probably even a great deal of time today, I don't have a handle on it, without a conscious thought or a conscious concern for any other human being who lives upon the face of this earth. If you had something I wanted, I took it. When I got whatever it is that you had that I wanted, I cast it aside like so much trash and I went on about my business. That's the way I live my life. Oh, I didn't live my life like that one day or one week or till I got a court card. I lived my life like that from my earliest recollection of life until a long time after I was an Alcoholics Anonymous. And at the ripe old age of 25 or 26 years old, when I came to in that cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary, there wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth that would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone. But you know what? They should be gone. I didn't have any right, and I still don't have any right to have any of them back. I don't have any right to have anything good and decent in my life. I just didn't. But that's what stumbled into your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. On the fourth day of November, 1959, I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I didn't come here to get sober. I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because the institution I was in let women come in there. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, it'll soon be 50 years ago, smell perfume, and I've been honking and sniffing around her ever since. I don't think motives count here. I think actions count here. It's been illustrated all week long by these fine people. And by the way, I want to say something before I... Don't ever change anything that you do or did this weekend in this conference. You don't need any suggestions how to make it any better. It ain't going to get no better. All you're going to do if you make suggestions is screw it up. And if you do, I'm personally going to come up here and kick the committee's ass all around the room. Well, you've evidenced this weekend, I've evidenced it. I sit last night and heard my lovely wife, Karen, who I really appreciate inviting us to come together. We don't get to spend a lot of time together on the weekend because I'm gone a lot and she works. And then I heard Eileen talk today, and I tell you, as far as I'm concerned, and I go to a lot of these things, I've never heard two finer Women Alcoholics Anonymous talks in my entire existence of Alcoholics Anonymous than those two you've heard already this weekend. There's a lot of people running around Alcoholics Anonymous masquerading as speakers, but they couldn't give those two talks. You know, the attraction that brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous was one thing. But how I got here is another thing. You see, my last time out, I killed me, for all intents and purposes. I'd had 2 years doing to me everything I wanted to do to me with as much money as I needed to do it with any time I wanted to do it with. I ended up 128 pounds strapped down on the bed in the Los Angeles County Jail of bright yellow with a doctor standing at the foot of my bed telling me I was going to die. That day, it didn't seem like such a bad idea to me. Death seemed like a thing because I couldn't turn off the nightmares anymore. I never wanted to look in my mother's eyes ever again. I couldn't erase the words that my mother screamed at me through the visiting screen that, look what you've done now, you've killed our baby. And it went on and on and on, and there's countless thousands of faces of people I'd harmed in my self-centered, self-seeking walk through life. And death seemed like a great idea. But I laid in that bed all night, and the doctor came back every morning and said the same thing to me, and I just laid there waiting. And one night, in the middle of the night, because I had nothing better to do, I screamed out the only prayer I'd ever said in my life. I said, "Oh, God, help me." Now, I don't know whether I was praying for life or praying for death. It's immaterial. There was no blinding flashes of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying, "We got an A meeting down there." I didn't get up and wander off into the tulip somewhere. I just went to sleep for a little while. And I started to get better and better and better. And the next thing I know, 2 weeks later, I'm up, running around a jail looking for some more of the poison to put me back on the bed I'd just gotten off of. A very good reason for that. In the back of my mind, over half a century later, is the knowledge, that when I can't stand life on life's terms any longer, I know what makes the big hurt go away. I'm an alcoholic. If you put me in the wrong place, at the wrong time, in the wrong set of circumstances, I'm going to be drunk. It doesn't make any difference how many people I've sponsored, how many meetings I go to, how many sponsors I've had. It doesn't make a fiddler's damn. If you put me in the wrong place at the wrong time and the wrong set of circumstances, I'm history. I'm an alcoholic. Not a heavy drinker. I'm an alcoholic. I'm not a drug addict. I'm an alcoholic. And that's just the way it is. My grandmother, who adored me, I was my grandmother's favorite thing on this earth. The last time I saw my grandmother, she was kneeling at my bedside at Miniatures Clinic in Topeka, Kansas, when I was trying to recover from my selfish, self-centered ideas. And she was praying for me. My grandmother prayed for me every day of her life. My grandmother loved me. And I'm not going to stand here and foolishly try to tell you my grandmother's prayers didn't help. I think they kept me out of harm's way from time. I think prayers help. They may not be the answer to everything, but I think they do help. My grandmother. But I tell you something I know for a fact. It wasn't until I asked God for help that I could possibly ever get it. Something had to happen to me that separated me from me and me from you and me from everything else. And isn't it ironic that in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says that deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is the basic fundamental idea of God. Isn't that amazing? And there's the last place we ever look for him. The very last place we ever look for God is way down deep within ourselves. I can see the pathway from that prayer to where I stand right this moment. Because there ain't no way in the world that I could have got that AA meeting. And here's how I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I came in and I sit down in the back row where people like me sit. I wasn't going to move up too close. Somebody might think I'm an AA member, and I don't even know what AA is. I got my coat collar up and my shades on because I'm cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, I'd have froze to death, for God's sakes. But there I am. I'm hip. The balls of my feet kind of tickled me when I walked. Well, you see all these wannabe hipsters walking around dragging their leg? I invented that. It don't make much difference. And I moved in. I sat back there on what I lovingly call my throne of contempt. I'm sitting back there, and I see up on the backboard two big A's. I think to myself, my God, I must have wandered into an anti-aircraft gate. I tell you, this clown sitting next to me, what is this? He says, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. I sunk down in my seat. I didn't anybody see the big gangster hanging out with them winos. Been Gangsters Anonymous or Over Hip Anonymous or Doo-Doo Pitopples Anonymous, anything. Dope Fiends Anonymous. Dope Fiends. Kind of makes addicts seem a little candy ass, don't it? Man, you're going to be bad for Christ's sake. I don't know what I'm staring at. I'll tell you what's frightening sometimes to me. Here I am, sitting in a room, staring at an answer that I had sold my soul for. But I don't recognize the answer because I don't know what my problem is. Over and over and over again, I got to tell you, you don't know what's wrong with you, how are you going to seek a solution? And I didn't know. There was something about these people. You know what my salvation is? These people, you, are my salvation. There was something about you I didn't understand. You know what these crazy people did? Sunday mornings. There's no money in the treatment of alcoholism. The only time people were doing anything in AA was so they could stay sober and carry the message. There was no profit motivation. There was nothing there. People bought their own gasoline. They paid for their own. They drove up these old back roads 100 miles every Sunday at their own expenses. They spent 2 hours talking to a room full of people who didn't want to listen to them. People like me who sat in the back row and made fun of them. Let me tell you how very sick that is. I didn't know. Here I am, sitting in the penitentiary, not knowing when I'm going home, and I'm making fun of people who are leaving in an hour. Oh, but I'm hip. How would I know? I got up courage one day. I said to this guy, "Hey," that's the way I talk to him. When you're hip, that's the way you talk to him. "Hey!" Every once in a while, you get out a word that's not cussing, you know. You don't call the girls man and all that stuff. What do you get out of coming up here, anyhow? What are you, some type of a sicko? You want to look at the animals in the cages? What's your deal, anyhow? And he gave me one of these deep A answers. It drives newcomers crazy. "Well, son," he said, "when you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it." I kept coming back to your meetings because I'd seen you. And I didn't realize that then, seeing you, I'd seen the answer. There's something about one alcoholic looking at another alcoholic. I mean, Jim said it. I mean, Karen said it. Everybody says it. There's something about one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. There's something about an alcoholic being faced and given the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, pure and simple, without all the Freudian nonsense and stuff that goes on. It's just something about it. And I knew there was something, but you proved to me I wasn't an alcoholic, you see, by what you said. Because I'm sitting in the back row of this meeting, and you're getting up at a podium like this, and you're saying, "I used to drink, and now I don't drink anymore, and everything is just wonderful." And here I am sitting back there, and say, "I guess I'm not alcoholic then. I'm not drinking, and I'm crazy. God, I wish I was alcoholic," I used to say. "If I could just be alcoholic, then all I'd have to do is not drink, and I'd be okay." And unbeknownst to me, an alcoholic, I'm trying to identify what a problem with alcohol compared to my illness called alcoholism. And see, drinking is not my problem. That's my solution to my problem. My problem is being sober, for Christ's sake. And I don't know what to do, so how am I I just sit back here. My salvation came to me one day, and that's why I guess why they keep telling you if you're new to keep coming back to meetings. A little man wandered into the penitentiary one day on that panel. Man, I knew, he did 23 flat years in the penitentiary. And he stood at the podium very much like this and told me something that nobody had ever told me before. All the great psychiatrists and sociologists and criminologists and people with walls full of plaques and diplomas didn't know. He looked down where I was sitting and said, "You don't have to live like this no more if you don't want to. You don't have to do it like this no more." Nobody had ever told me. They said, "Don't do it." They tell me time since I'm that high. They're telling me, "Johnny, if you didn't drink these things and swallow these things or smoke, you wouldn't have any problems." But none of them ever took into consideration. Every time they told me that, I was as physically sober as I am this moment. How many times I wanted to scream out, "I'm good God, doctor, don't you understand?" Because they don't. If you're not alcoholic, you'll never understand why I drink. But if you're not alcoholic, I'll never understand why you don't. You ever listen to them? They're pathetic. My old brother, who died up here in Tacoma, moved to Tacoma, not alcoholic. You know what he used to say when I tell him, "Drink?" He'd have a couple and say, "No, thank you, I'm starting to feel it." I quit that experience. I quit that experiment the last time I ever saw him. I took him out and going to get him drunk. Thought he deserved it. He worked hard, had a couple kids. And he said to me after about two drinks, he said, "I got to go home. I just got paid." And that kind of puzzled me. He said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I'm going to Mexico." "You don't have a car." I said, "I don't care. I'm going to Mexico." But that's what I'm talking about. I went up to this man that day, this meeting, and I guess something, I knew this guy, for a matter of fact. See, he was my baseball coach when I was the star second baseman for the San Quentin Pirates. I put that on a resume one time. You ought to have saw that guy's reaction to it. And I said to him, how do you learn how to live? And see, what I really wanted to know was, so it's come to my attention as my uncovering and discovering has happened, I want to know how you can lay down and sleep all night without the use of some type of medication. I want to know how you can sleep without the nightmares. How do you sleep all night without 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning in cold sweats, staring at that picture at my baby brother's gravesite while I'm handcuffed between 2 detectives while they bury him, with my mother staring at me with all the hate and venom that any unhuman being could ever have towards another one? That kept me awake. That kept me, but torturing me. I lived that way for a long time. He gave me an answer to seemingly being lost in Alcoholics Anonymous today. That's why it's so important for me to be at a gathering like this. And he told me about a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. He said if I'd go get that book, he'd go home and pray that I'd find some part of me in it. And so the next day, I went over to the prison library and stole the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, you got to realize I got a big-time gangster image. You know, I'm known as Weddle Loco, which means in English the white nut. Something to hang on to in your resume, isn't it? I don't want my name alongside of anything as lame as Alcoholics Anonymous. Get out. And opened your book, Alcoholics Anonymous, not to get sober and stay sober from that day to this day, and not to live this good life that I have and a host of friends that I've got all over the world. Not at all. I opened the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, with the Loser's theme song going off in my head. I'm going to read your book. And I'm going to prove to you that my case is different. This won't work for me. The Loser's theme song in Alcoholics Anonymous.
You don't understand. My case is different. I'm an alcoholic and something.
And guys, I sponsor start talking like that. I start speaking Mexican to them. Adios. And if you're sitting in this room and you think your case is different, I can say to you, hasta la vista, baby. You won't be here the next time I come back either. It's amazing to me. The only difference here is the click, click, clicking in your head. And as long as you remain different, you won't do what's necessary to stay here. I was reading the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and I looked down there and I was reading the doctor's opinion, and my eyes came across a phrase. I don't know if you ever read anything that just kind of jumped at you. It was called the phenomenon of craving. And I couldn't get that out of my mind for a couple, 3 weeks, reading that thing. I read it over and over and over, night after night and night. And I started to go back and look over my life, and I had a lot of opportunities in life. I was given a body that, with all intents and purposes, should have been able to play Major League Baseball. I had an arm that could throw a ball through a wall. I could run like a deer, and I could hit a BB. And when I was in reform school in San Fernando Valley, I was offered a scholarship to play baseball for the University of California, Los Angeles. 1951, while I was in San Quentin State Penitentiary, I was offered a contract to play baseball for the St. Louis Cardinals. I never got to UCLA, or did I ever get to spring training for the Cardinals. And I thought for a long time, because of where I came from, I thought it was my background, them drunken people and stool pigeons that put the finger on me. You know, the psychiatrist who labeled me criminally insane and all this other kind of stuff. Now, I was a victim before it became popular in AA. And what dawned on me, I believe, this is my own personal belief because I've had a long time to look back on it. I took the first step. Is that for me? An 8-ball will do. Old habits. Old habits are hard to break, aren't they? I tell you. I believe that if there's been any recovery in my life whatsoever, it started that day when I did something that I must do today, and I have done for almost 50 years. That day, I assumed the responsibility for my own actions. That wasn't alcohol's fault. It wasn't my mother's fault, my father's fault, my family's fault. It wasn't the policeman's fault. It wasn't alcohol's fault. It wasn't drugs' fault. It wasn't my disease's fault. It wasn't my illness. I'm the guy who drank. I'm the guy that committed the atrocities. If their fault, it'd be me. Today, if there be fault in my life, it's my responsibility. I'm the culprit. I did that. Shortly thereafter, I walked out of a man's office where I just spent 3.5 hours telling him about every rotten, filthy, corrupt thing I'd ever done in my life. Called the fifth step out of our book. I remember walking out of the man's office, and he said to me, "My God, Johnny, haven't you ever done anything decent in your entire life?" And I couldn't think of a thing. I couldn't think of a kind act, a kind thought, a concern, nothing. It was all about me. And my life started to be coming together. I wrote letters, tried to do what our program says. And I've been very fortunate because I've been blessed by a lot of people who've shown me things in Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of them, there was a guy who used to come to that institution every Thursday. He's dead now. We nicknamed him Tehachapi Bill. He was a member of our group on Thursday, and he was a wonderful little man. And he'd come there every Thursday, and he would always recite a little poem called "The Touch of the Master's Hand" at the end of his talk. And I loved him, and he's the one who told me that he remembers the night that I made the transition, because I playing baseball. I was on the practice field of baseball. They announced Alcoholics Anonymous, and I walked off the baseball diamond and went to an AA meeting. And I remember one time, after I was in AA a few minutes, a few months maybe, I was given the opportunity to go down and greet him when he came to the gate of the institution every week. And it was in the wintertime, and we were up in the mountains. It was a real snowy night, and the roads had been closed. He lived about 10 miles down the road, and I went over there, and I'm standing at the gatehouse, and a screw is standing there, and he said to me, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "I'm waiting for Bill." He said, "He ain't coming." I said, "Yes, he is." He said, "Well, how do you know he's going to come?" I said, "Because he said he was going to come. He told me last week, I'll be there, Johnny." He said, "He ain't coming, Johnny. The roads are closed, for God's sake. There's a blizzard. He can't get here." I said, "He said he's going to be here." And so I sit around there for about 15 or 20 minutes, and you know, this cop looking at me, and I'm looking at him, and I don't want to look bad. And he says, "He's not coming." And I said, "Okay." So about the time I got real discouraged, I started to walk out the door, and just as I got out the door of the guard shack, I hear a thing in the back. It goes, ting. And I thought I was having a flashback or something. And so I stuck my head in the guard shack, and I said, "You hear that?" And he said, "Hear what?" I said, "Listen." It was ting, ting. Then it was ting, 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 ting. And I said, "You hear that?" He said, "What is it?" And it got louder and louder and louder, and it wasn't but about 15 minutes later, here come Bill. He had a horse and a sleigh. And he was coming to that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because it was his meeting too. It took me a long time to realize about commitment, but that's a glaring example of commitment, Alcoholics Anonymous. This man came to that meeting, not so necessary to carry the message to us, but to come because that was his meeting. It was the only one in that little town outside of that penitentiary that he could come to. And he was the only one that would come. In June the 4th, 1961, I walked out of the penitentiary to a world I didn't know anything about. Not at all. I'd never spent a day out there in the world without something in my system. I'd never worked a day in my life. I didn't have a driver's license. I didn't have a Social Security card. I didn't have nothing. But I was armed with something that I had never been armed with before. The first 9 steps of our program of recovery. I'd incorporated them into my life. And in so doing, there was a dream that appeared in my life that maybe someday you would let me come and sit with you. Oh, I never dreamed you'd ever ask me to do anything. I thought maybe you'd make me sit out there somewhere in the far side, not let me in with you. I didn't think you'd let scum like me around you. But I said to myself, if they gave me the privilege of coming and sitting in the meetings, I'll do anything they ask me to do. I'm very pleased tonight to be able to tell you that for over the last 48 years of my life, I've done everything that Alcoholics Anonymous has asked me to do. Not always willingly. Be careful of people who say, I just can't wait to get to my next meeting. But I always do it. My mother met me that day and fell off the steps blind drunk. I picked her up and put her on a couch and said, Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting. She said, fine, I think you should. I like to tell you, I got sober, and my mom got sober, and my dog got sober, and my cat got sober, and we're the sober, 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 sober. Not in my experience. My mother drank herself to death, and I had a ringside seat watching it, powerless to do anything about it. But you know what my sponsor told me to do? He says, go be your mother's son. That's all. You know, my mother died and never forgave me for killing her baby. I was the last thing in this world my mother ever saw. And she looked at me with all the hate that she looked at me at my baby brother's funeral that day in that hospital, and I took care of her the last year she lived. But you see, my sponsor told me that I didn't deserve my mother's forgiveness, and I didn't, and I still don't. See, I have a couple kids, and I don't know how I would treat my oldest daughter if she was responsible for the death of my youngest daughter. I tore my mother's heart out with my actions, and that was the final crushing blow of her life. But you taught me, and my sponsor taught me to be her son, to go by and look after her, and when she was drunk when I got there, to stand her verbal abuse and her criticisms and her hatredness, and going about my business, whether I liked it or whether I didn't like it. And so when my mother died that day, I had done the best I could to be her son, whether she liked it or whether she didn't. I went to this meeting one night, and this guy by the name of Norm Alpe walked up to me and told me he's going to be my sponsor. I said, what's that? He said, well, I'm going to help you get things done that need to be done. I said, okay, what do you want me to do? He said, why do you ask me? I said, you just told me you were going to be my sponsor. He said, Johnny, if I can't run my life, what the hell makes you think I can run yours? And I said to him, well, what am I supposed to do? He said, why don't you just do what I do? And I said to him, okay, what is it? And I'm getting a little chesty now. What is it you do? And he gave me the great glowing answer, well, son, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. I've just broke up the great mystery of sponsorship to you. Called monkey see, monkey do. You just got to pick the right monkey. A lot of people run around here, monkey suits ain't monkeys. They are. You can hear them. You know, call AA light. Less meeting, more dances. Oh, you don't have to do that. You have to do nothing here. Just don't drink. That's what they tell you. Don't drink. Don't drink if your ass fall off. I'll tell you, I'm going to be a lot drunk a long time before that pain gets that severe in my life. Don't drink. You hear stupid stories. Don't drink no matter what. Alcoholics drink no matter what. Heavy drinkers don't. Alcoholics do. You know what the first thing my sponsor said to me was? Why don't you get a job and go to work? You're a bum. I told him, I'm not a bum. He said, what are you? I'm an AA member. He says, then you're an AA bum. Bums don't work. He said, while we're at it, why don't you get off of welfare? I almost hit him. I said, I ain't never been on welfare, Normal. If you ever said to me again, I'm going to smack you. He says, what do you call living in penitentiary? Self-supporting through your own contribution? Wouldn't let me drive a car, didn't have a driver's license. I didn't see what that had to do with anything. I had my driver's license suspended in 1948 for the rest of my natural life. So what? Never been sent to the penitentiary for driving on a revoked license. Would have been nice to have a 30-day rest period every once in a while, wouldn't it? You know why my sponsor always stopped my debate in my head? Always, same way. When I start to debate him, I say, what if I don't do that? He said, well, you may drink. End of talk. Ends all conversation. Today it ends all conversation. You don't do it, you may drink. End all debate. Surrender, to me, is when I get out of the debating society. I don't understand. I used to have to call him up and go to meetings. Norm, what do you want, jackass? I said, Norm, I know you're going to drive by here and you're going to go to a meeting. Would you mind pick me? I need to go to a meeting, Norm. Come by and pick me up, Norm, and I go to a meeting with you because I really need to go to a meeting, Norm. You know how you beg and snivel. Hate it. Like, it's okay, jackass. I'll be ready. Be standing on the street corner, 6 o'clock. I'll pick you up. He drove over one day. I remember this one. Dawned on me not very long. We had the window rolled down. I stuck my head in the window and said, where are we going? He said, we ain't going nowhere. And he drove off. And so I called him up. I said to him, what did you do? And he said, Johnny, you called me up and you begged me over the phone to come and pick you up and take you to an AA meeting, didn't you? And I said, yes. He says, and when I drove up, what did you ask me? I said, where are we going? He said, where in the hell do you think I was going to take you to? A dance? A party somewhere? A concert? A movie? You asked me to go to a meeting. 22 years later, before he died, for the next 22 years, every time he drove up, I just got in the car. I never said to him, where are we going? Ever again. I called him up in the middle of the night, and it's when you know, you newcomers, when you call your sponsor in the middle of the night, see how sincere they are. Call him up, I'd say, Norm. He say, what do you want now, jackass? I say, Norm, my program ain't working. He'd say, try ours. But see, he never let it lay there. He'd say, jackass, your program, jackass, at the ripe old age of 25 years old, got you crawling around in a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary. That's your program, Johnny. Now, our program in your life on a part-time basis, you always had to put that in, part-time, it got you a pretty good life. Now, you can't argue with that. Can't argue with it at all. I remember when I finally got a driver's license because I got a job where I had to drive a car and got an old rattletrap car and had insurance on it. I drove her over to his house. I remember him walking around the side of his house in one of them undershirts and a pair of jeans and looking at that car and looking at me. He knew it was wrong. And you know what he said to me? Maybe you're starting to get the idea, Johnny. There ain't a damn thing special about you just because you got sober. That everything you have to do is more than anybody else because you got a long way to come and a long way to do it just to catch up with these people who've been doing it all the time. What a wise man he was. I've had some marvelous things happen to me. For a long time, I went up and talked at a meeting in San Jose where a guy's sponsor took his birthday every year, and I remember going up there one night and I'm dressed pretty much like I'm dressed right now, and I'm sitting over in the corner having a cup of coffee waiting for the meeting to start, and some kid comes dragging his leg up. You know how they he probably had earrings, a hat on backward, he had it all together, you know. Hey, dude! I looked around and said, who are you talking to? Who are you? He said, are you Johnny Harris? And I said, yeah, I am. He said, you don't look like him. I said, well, what does he look like? Oh, you know, man, I heard you. You know, he gives you a whole thing. You can't understand that garbage they're talking. I mean, you know, it's like Texan in English. You know what I mean? And I said to him when he got all through with it, he said, they've been playing your tape over there for us in the sober house. I said, well, good. And I said, I'll ask you a question. He said, what do you want to know? I said, well, if I had on a leather jacket and long hair and a goatee and earrings in my ear and my hat on backward and I talked out of the side of my mouth and I used mother every other word. Would that kind of fit your image? He said, yeah, that's got it. I said, you don't seem to understand, young man. I live by a program that's spiritual in nature. When practice as a way of life evolves you out of that garbage. He said, the hell you said. He turned and walked off. I thought, well, I made another friend in San Jose. About 3 or 4 months later, I'm talking at a meeting Saturday night in Lake Tahoe or somewhere up there. And I walked into this room, a big room like this, and I'm dressed pretty much the way I am. And I walk in, and they're sitting in the front of me, that kid. Only it ain't the same kid no more. And so I went over, and he stood up and went, I don't know what's going to happen now, you know what I mean? And he went over there, and he put his arms around me, gave me a hug, and kissed me on the cheek, and he said to me, I just want to let you know that I live by the same spiritual program that you do. That took my breath away. Realized how easy it would have been for me to kill him in San Jose. All I would have had to do was to get down with him and try to prove that I'm really Johnny. You know what I mean, man? Get him talk that garbage and dress that garbage and act and wear my little convict badass suit and talk that stuff. I'd killed him. How come I'm out there in the streets where all these so-called wannabe hipsters are nowadays? They don't tell you. They always say to you, hey, baby, let's go get down. How come any of them suckers ever tell you, let's go get up? You want me to tell you why? Ain't nobody down wants you up. When they're down and you're up, you're a testimony to the lie they're living. And they know it. You know it. That's what that kid saw. You know what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous? We give you something to do here to make you feel better. They've been talking about it all weekend, these people. About commitment, little jobs, making coffee, sweeping floors, picking up chairs, central service, general service, voices, leaders, readers, whatever. And somehow or other, it makes you feel like you're part of something. To be a part of something, you got to be a part of something. That's what my sponsor did to me. He put me right smack dab in the middle of this thing called AA. I thought he hated me, but he's the best friend I ever had. I loved him. I've been very fortunate in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had three probably of the greatest members of Alcoholics Anonymous stamp their thing into my life and make my life what it is today. You know, my first one was Norm Alpe as my sponsor, and there was an old man by the name of Chuck who was the only father I've ever known. I called him Papa. He called me Son. He more or less adopted me. I used to spend a great deal of time with them both, and I learned to knee all the things that I was supposed to know, and I was always trying to impress my papa. I was always trying to pick up little words that he said and try to put it into my conversation, and I used to say things to him, you know, that I heard him say at the meeting on the way home, and he'd say, that's not the way I said it, son. And so I got to a point I wouldn't say nothing. I'd just sit over in the car and watch him, you know what I mean? One night we were coming back from Santa Maria. I was just up there not long ago, and we were coming back from Santa Maria, and I was over at the literature table, and I picked up a pamphlet on why we were chosen. God, it sounds good to an egotist. And we were on the way back, and I told Papa, I said, I'd like to read this to you, Pop. And he said, what is it? And I said, why we were chosen. He rolled down the window. He said, throw it out. We're not chosen. I said, what do you mean we're not chosen? It says here we're chosen. He said, Johnny, we're not chosen. He said, we're all God's kids. If one of us we are, we all are. If I am, you are. If you are, I am. If I'm not, you're not. And then I said to him, in my debating society, I said, then how come I'm sober? I'm sober. My mother is a far better person than I'll ever be is not sober. Then how come I'm sober? He said, very simple. You've come to understand you're one of God's kids and you act like it. I say, what do God's kids act like? He said, they just wander around the world and try to help people get things done that need to be done. And they do it for free, and they do it for fun. What a novel concept for living. But that's Alcoholics Anonymous in a nutshell, really. I tell you, sometimes I think the literature tables are dangerous for newcomers. I was at a meeting one night with Norm. He was speaking. And at the coffee break, I went to the literature table. I was in the dangerous stage of 2 or 3 years sober now. You know, where I've, you know, probably had a job making coffee or something. Maybe I'd give it a 10-minute talk or something. And I'm back at the literature table, and at the coffee break, there's a tap on my shoulder. I turn around, there's some kid standing there, and he looked at me, and he said, "Johnny." And I said, "Yes." He said, "I heard you talk the other night." "You know what? Yeah, what did I say?" He said, "I'm, you know, man, you're a miracle." I said, "Really? What was it I said?" You know, how humble we are, you know. Just, and he went on and on and on. And by the time the coffee breaks over, I'm gone, for all intents and purposes. I'm floating back down the aisle, sitting down looking out the window to see where the spaceship is. I know it's coming. Norm's watching me. And he's talking, and I'm sitting there staring out the window, looking around, waiting for the tap on the shoulder to go home, you know, just all that kind of stuff. And on the way home that night, we're riding in the car, and Norm looked at me, and he said, "I'm looking out the window." And he said, "Jackass, what's the matter with you? You smoking that stuff? What's wrong with you?" I said, "I don't think you're going to understand this, Norm, but I'm a miracle." That was not Norm's reaction. Norm's reaction was he slammed on the brakes, damn near ran into the divider, and got this close to my ear and screamed, "You're what?" I said, "I'm a miracle, Norm." He said, "Where do you get this nonsense?" I said, "Amy." He said, "You're not a miracle, jackass. Alcoholics Anonymous is the miracle. You're just a small part of it." Now, I don't know what it does for all the miracles in Tacoma tonight, but I can tell you what it's done for me. It's kept me small enough to stay here. You can't possibly imagine what an egotist like me would do if I thought I was a miracle. You let your imagination soar. Probably be getting some buses to take us all to Waco tonight to do it right. You know, just time. I have that type of an ego. I know that. That's why it's still a necessity for me, after all these many years of sobriety, to have a sponsor who's stronger than my head that I report to every day. It's still necessary for me to go to 4 or 5 meetings a week to keep me in balance, not to save any soul or not drink. It's unnecessary because I know what I'm capable of if I let this thing inside of me control me again. It's awful easy to get pats on the back and get all built up here, and sponsors are here to stick the needle and puncture that balloon. Norm died the day of my 22nd AA birthday. One of the great things Norm told me when I was new, he said, "How long have you been sober, hot shot?" I told him, 19 months, the day I come out of the penitentiary. He said, "No, you're not. You're sober and alcoholic anonymous from the day you came out of the penitentiary." I said, "Why?" And he said, "In there ain't out here." How right he was. See, out here, nobody rings bells for you. Nobody prepares your meals for you. Nobody takes you to work or brings you home. And the great thing my sponsor did for me to let me be a newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, an egotist like me can run wild with 19 months. He let me be a newcomer in AA. And besides, he was my sponsor. And when he died, I went down to ask the problem of a man named Clancy, and I asked him how to solve this problem that I'd already solved. But I wanted some reassurance. As I turned to walk out the door of the meeting that day, at his office that day, I felt a chill in my mind. I turned around and looked at him. I said, "You know what, Clancy, I need a sponsor." He slid back in his chair and put his glasses down on his nose. I thought he was going to say, "What an order. I can't go through with it." And he said, "Okay, let's give it a whirl." I said, "What do you want me to do?" And he said, "You still count your time in the penitentiary?" I said, "No." Norm says, "No." And he said, "Okay, we'll keep it that way. Good idea." He says, "By the way, I just want you to call me every day, and I want you to come to the Wednesday night meeting." Okay. 26 years come and gone, I still call Clancy every day. I still go to the Wednesday night meeting. The guy said to me the other day, "You still call Clancy all the time?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Why?" I said, "You've never told me not to yet." Basically, that's simple, isn't it? But I've had these three magnificent men in my life, and they've all had one common thing in common, all of them. They've all been active participating members of Alcoholics Anonymous. They've all given of their time for free and for fun, and they've always shown me by example what to do. And because I watched Norm, I watched my sponsor Norm night after night, night after night, weekend after weekend, leave his family and go out and try to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous for free and for fun. Never a gripe about it, he just did it. I watched this old man that I love so much, this father of mine. As long as he was physically able, for 25 years I had him next to me. I watched him night after night after week after week after week get in his car, get in an airplane to go out and carry the message. I watched my current sponsor do the same thing, time, night after night after night after night, weekend after weekend after weekend, leave everything and go out and try to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. You know, you can call, you know, everybody called my papa a spiritual giant. My papa was a man of action. Your actions are what denotes what kind of a spirituality you are. You really believe in something and you try to pass it on. Now, I'm getting a little long in the tooth, and I guess there's going to come a time when I'm not going to be here, I suppose. But when I get to wherever I'm going, and if there ain't people like Norm Alpe there and my Papa Chuck, I don't believe I want to go. If there ain't birds singing and pretty flowers, I'm sure I don't want to go. Because, you see, before these people came into my life and before you, there was nothing but hell in there. And if I ever get to wherever you're going, where we're all going to go, and those you're not there, I don't think I want to go there, because before you came into my life, I lived in absolute hell. I lived with the dream that I was never going to be any different than what I was. I was going to die in a gas chamber, or die in a gang fight, or the police were going to blow my brains out. I was going to die of an overdose somewhere in some back room somewhere. I was told that since I was 9 years old until I was almost 30. So when I got here, I believed it. You have made a difference in my life. My sponsor has made a difference in my life. Why wouldn't I want to go to meetings? I've been given a great life, fantastic life. I have these people indebted in my soul, this legacy that they left me. This great legacy that Norm left me and my papa left me, the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. I got to take care of my papa the last year he lived. I got to go sit with him and put him in my lap and rock him to sleep like he did me when I was new and tell him that I loved him over and over and over again. I love you, Papa, no matter what. So now today I can look at my wife and tell her I love her. I can look at my kids and tell them I love them. I can put my arms around my grandsons and tell them I love them. I can take my great-grandchildren and put them in my lap and put them and go to their little parties and tell them I love them. Not very long ago, I got two daughters, four grandsons, and six great-grandchildren. None of them have ever seen me drink. That isn't a tribute to me. That's a tribute to you. Because I am exactly what you have created, or at least the people who have gone before me. You taught me how to walk, how to talk, how to dress, how to behave, how to have common courtesy for the guy sitting next to me. You gave me a God of my very own. My papa used to say things like this to me: nature abhors a vacuum, but God abhors a vacuum even more under heaven and earth. He said if you could empty yourself of self, you would be automatically full of God. Automatically. So it's a necessity to go out and look all over someplace for God. It says in our book, we take a searching and a fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And then we take a fifth step, which is empty ourselves of self. But the reason I go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous on a regular basis, four or five times a week, sometimes even more so, is because my sponsor yelled at me in meetings and told me to shut up and sit still and pay attention. He was introducing me to a God of my very own, because I sat right down there at that table last night and I heard my lovely wife speak. I sat down there this morning and I heard Elaine speak. I sit and heard these things going on in AA all day today, and you know what? I sit over there and listen to the fifth chapter being read. I sit over there and listen to the 12 traditions being read. I sit over there and listen to the mouth talk about this thing and make the announcements. But you know what? When I'm listening to them, I'm not thinking about me. I'm more interested in the fifth chapter and the 12 traditions, Karen's talk and Elaine's talk, than I am myself at that moment. And as far as I can perceive, that's about as close to God as I'm ever going to get. Because I believe my papa when he said, empty myself of self. And so when I'm more concerned about your life than I am me, I'm never going to be any closer to God. So why wouldn't I want to be here with you? Why wouldn't I want to sit still and hear this magic message of recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous? Every living thing I have in my life, I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything. Everything I may ever hope to have in my life, I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. And dear friends, please believe this. It is a long, long walk from a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary to where I stand right now. But for the grace of God, AA and good people like you, I could have missed it all. Thank you very much.